From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam blasts Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri for describing Hong Kong as a police state. Senator Hawley joins us in just a moment. I'll also ask him to weigh in on the unfolding events with Turkey and Syria. And CNN hosted the fourth Democratic presidential debate last night in Ohio. Rich Noyes, the research director of the Media Research Center, joins me with analysis. Later, Travis Weber, FRC's vice president of policy, will join me to take a deeper dive in the positions being staked out by the Democratic candidates. The chasm between the two parties is growing wider by the debate. Also, a victory in the courts. A federal district judge has said doctors won't be forced to perform gender transition procedures. I'll talk with Luke Goodrich, who is the vice president and senior counsel at the Beckett Fund and the author of Free to Believe, The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. And by the way, I would encourage you, if you were not able to be at the Values Voter Summit this past weekend, to check out the archived sessions. Absolutely phenomenal from start to finish, especially the panel. So much good information that you will not get anywhere else. The media is not going to cover it. Religious liberty was covered. We covered the issue of free speech. We talked about the whole gender agenda that's being driven. We talked about abortion survivors. That was by far the most powerful panel we've ever had. Those who've actually survived abortions. Now, we're told that they don't exist. Well, they do. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com or ValuesVotersSummit.org, and watch those sessions. Just powerful. All right. In just a moment, I'll talk with Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri about his recent trip to Hong Kong. In fact, this past weekend, he was in Hong Kong, which he called on Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam to resign. After observing what was going on there, he described it as a police state. She pushes back, saying not so. Well, joining me now is Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who serves on the Judiciary Committee, the Armed Services Committee, Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, and the Small Business and Entrepreneur Committee, and is on the Special Committee on Aging. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you just returned from a trip to Hong Kong. What did you see firsthand?
Well, what I saw is that it is becoming a police state, Tony. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. This is a city of 7.5 million people that is united in protests against communist Beijing's attempt to take away their basic rights. But what's happening is that the Beijing-controlled government is suspending their right to protest. They are using the police force to violently put down protesters, to attack protesters. They are end-running the chief executive is end-running the legislature to bring in anti-protest measures, and the people of Hong Kong have no say over any of this. It really is an urgent moment for Hong Kong, and I think for the world.
All right, Senator, I want to play a short clip of what Carrie Lam had to say yesterday about your visit and allow you to respond to it. Play the clip with Carrie Lam.
As far as individual U.S. senators coming to Hong Kong, meeting with a lot of people and making comments, I have to say that I thought their visit to Hong Kong will enable them to see the actual situation in a comprehensive and objective manner. But unfortunately, the feedback that I've got is most of them, or several of them, coming here, they have very preconceived views about Hong Kong situation. That's why for this particular senator to describe Hong Kong as becoming a police state is totally irresponsible and unfounded. The Hong Kong police force is a highly professional and civilized force. I would challenge every politician to ask themselves if the large extent of violence act and all those petrol bombs and arson and attacks, deadly attacks on policemen happened in their own country, what would they do? What would their policemen do? So my simple response is to describe Hong Kong as a police state is totally unfounded.
Senator, your response?
It seems like we touched a nerve, doesn't it?
It
I mean,
does.
The truth is for this, for her to say this when she is an unelected puppet of Beijing, you know, if she wanted to prove that she's actually accountable to the people, that the police force that she directs is accountable to the people, submit to a vote. Give the people of Hong Kong the right to vote on her as their chief executive. Give the people of Hong Kong some meaningful oversight of the police. But in fact, there is none. The police are able to do whatever they want to do. The government has taken steps to ensure that, every average everyday citizens can't bring, for instance, suits against the police when there's violence, and they have no say in the management of the city or in the management of the executive or the police. And Carrie Lam is a Beijing puppet, and she's taking Hong Kong towards a police state.
Now, are you concerned about the threats that the Chinese President Xi Jinping is making?
Yeah, I mean, he said, Tony, that anybody who tried to, in his words, interfere with Hong Kong, I mean, that there would be broken bones that would be ground to powder. It's very violent rhetoric. Again, I think it shows actually the weakness of Beijing, that Beijing is desperately afraid that people will stand up to them. And this is why they're trying to censor Americans. Let's not lose sight here that Beijing is, the Communist Party of China is trying to censor American speech. They're trying to make the NBA a part of their propaganda machine. They're trying to make Apple a part of their propaganda operation. They're trying to bully us into being quiet. Mm-hmm. And that's why I went to Hong Kong, because I said, I'm not going to be bullied. I'm going to go see for myself. I'm going to go out to the streets myself, which I did, and to see what the facts are.
You mentioned NBA. You mentioned Apple. Speak to that. I mean, we've seen the NBA in full retreat mode when it comes to China. Almost, I mean, it kowtowing to the threats of China. When you've got these people in Hong Kong that are simply doing what every American would like to do, or has the benefit of enjoying freedom. They just want freedom.
You know, it's terrible to see all of these corporations in the NBA at the top of the list put their own monetary interests. This is about making money. I mean, let's be honest. That's what the NBA is most interested in. If they have to sell out America and American values to do it, then they're unfortunately happy to do it. And that's just wrong, Tony, and it's sad. And, you know, the NBA ought to have a little backbone. I mean, they ought to remember that they are an American organization, at least they used to be, and they ought to start acting like Americans, which is that we don't bow down to dictators. We don't salute and take orders from communists. And when Beijing told them that they ought to go out there and they couldn't say anything about Hong Kong and that they needed to silence themselves, the NBA should have said, take a hike. They should have said, we're canceling all of the exhibition games in China until the Hong Kong situation is peacefully resolved. But they're not willing to do that. And listen, this is just the beginning, because Beijing, this is how Beijing does business. They use their commercial leverage to try to impose censorship on Americans and American companies, to try to make American corporations part of their propaganda machine, and they're just going to keep doing it.
And the only counter leverage to that, I mean, we've seen this with Hollywood. Hollywood's doing it. We see the NBA doing it. I mean, selling out, as you said, American values and ideals. And even worse than that, all right, because I know you got, that's one issue. But you have, juxtaposed to that, you have these people in Hong Kong that are looking to America, upholding American freedom, waving American flags as a symbol of freedom. And we have those symbolic institutions of America willing to sell them out in a heartbeat. I think the counter to that is that American consumers need to take that to heart when it comes to making decisions about how they spend their money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, we've got to think about supporting the NBA if this is what they're going to do. I mean, if they're going to kowtow to Beijing, if they're going to become a propaganda mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party, I mean, let's not forget that Beijing, Communist China, they have been stealing our jobs for decades. I mean, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. They've been stealing our trade secrets, our technologies. They've been stealing from our workers. They're trying to build their military on the backs of our middle class. And they have grand designs. I mean, they want to shut up Hong Kong. Then they want to dominate Taiwan. They want to dominate the whole region. And they want ultimately America. I mean, they want to beat us. I mean, they are in a competition with us, and they're in it to win it. And our question has got to be, are we willing to stand up and say enough is enough?
Right. And we haven't even touched on the issue of religious persecution that China is involved in. And Uyghurs, other religious minorities in concentration camps. You know, and that's really where I almost lose it when it comes to the NBA and the others who are willing to kowtow to these tyrants who are literally abusing, killing, harvesting organs out of people. These people, this is atrocious what is happening.
It is absolutely atrocious. And freedom of religion, can I just say, you know, Hong Kong enjoys freedom of worship. They have freedom of worship. There are a number of faiths represented there, but the church, the Christian church, the Christian community is very vibrant there and very involved in this protest movement, in this freedom movement, which I think is a point of great pride. Exactly right. And that's the thing, is that if Beijing has its way, you better believe the first thing they'll do is get rid of freedom of worship, because
absolutely,
there's nothing more threatening to a totalitarian government than the right to worship and the right of conscience and to say, you know, no government's going to tell me what to believe.
I mean, that's what Hong Kong, the folks in Hong Kong are seeing as they look at this really crackdown in mainland China over religious freedom. So, I mean, they're right to be concerned, because that's exactly what they would get, a loss
yes.
of religious freedom.
Yes.
Senator, I want to shift gears before we run out of time here. I was actually at the White House earlier for a meeting. As I was walking in, Senator Mitch McConnell and the congressional leadership meeting with the president over Syria. Another issue related to religious freedom, Northeast Syria being a place where religious freedom was beginning to take root. Now that could very well be lost with the Turkish military moving in there, Syria aligning now Assad with the freedom troops there and the defense forces there in Northeast Syria. What's the latest?
Well, that's a good question, and we're getting briefed on this tomorrow, and so hopefully we'll get some hard facts about this. The Armed Services Committee is hearing testimony behind closed doors, actually, so we're supposed to be getting the latest intelligence. I'll just tell you, Tony, from my point of view, that, look, I think essentially abandoning our long-term allies in the Kurds, the people who have stood by us, is a mistake, and I think that we do have to refocus in the Middle East. We're not the Middle East policemen. We shouldn't be
right.
the guarantor of regional stability. We need to get refocused on counterterrorism in the Middle East. All of that is true, and all of that is important, but that does not mean that we give the green light to Turkey to come in and to overrun these folks who we have fought with alongside for decades now. So I hope that we'll pursue potential sanctions on Turkey. I think that calling for a ceasefire is absolutely necessary, and I hope that the administration will get tough with them. But, this has been unfortunate.
Yeah, I think Senator Lindsey Graham has his bill calling for some tough sanctions. We've been supportive of that. Talked to him last week on that. So I do think we've got to make the best of the situation, putting the squeeze on Turkey and dealing with the humanitarian crisis that's going to unfold here as we've got more and more refugees coming out of Syria. Senator, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us and giving us a good readout on your trip to Hong Kong.
Thank you for having me.
All right, absolutely. Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. All right, the fourth Democratic presidential debate took place last night in Ohio. Rich Noyes with the Media Research Center gives us analysis next here on Washington Watch, the Democratic presidential debate. You don't want to miss that. Stick around. More Washington Watch to come.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, 12 candidates took the stage for last night's Democratic presidential debate in Ohio, hosted by CNN and The New York Times in a state that every winning presidential candidate has carried since 1960, the Buckeye State. Well, joining me now with analysis, it's Rich Noyes. He's the research director at the Media Research Center. Rich, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, what's the main takeaways from last night's debate? All right, four times we've had these big presidential debates. What's beginning to shake out?
Well, I think this was the least watched of the four debates so far. So there's the debates are not building an appetite among the voters, even the Democratic voters, to see more and more of these people. It seems like there's more
that should
of
tell you something.
About them. That's not a great sign for a party, that needs enthusiasm to get its votes out. I would say, in each of these four debates, Joe Biden has seemed sort of the shakiest of the front runners. You know, he's got a harder time expressing his thoughts and getting himself pulled together. And, these are what I would call very easy debates for all the candidates. They're essentially liberal journalists asking very liberal questions, not really probing into any of their controversies and background. The closest thing we've had in this whole cycle to a personal controversy question, which you saw a lot of with the Republicans in 2015, was last night Anderson Cooper asked Joe Biden, the President Trump has falsely accused your son of doing something wrong while serving on a board in Ukraine. I want to point out there's no evidence of wrongdoing by either one of you. That is already knocking down all the charges so that Biden doesn't even have to. And yet Anderson Cooper was still attacked by another candidate, Cory Booker, for asking such an offensive question to Joe Biden, who Cory Booker called a statesman. So, this is the easiest questions these candidates will get. And if the ones are having a hard time dealing with those, when you get into a really rough and tumble general election, I'm not sure how they'll fare.
But there are if you comb through it, if you can watch it, you can see certain things emerge that tell you a lot about this candidate. So I want to play a couple of clips. One I want to play. This is Steyer, first time on the stage, billionaire, and he was they started off with the impeachment. Do you support impeaching the president? Should he be impeached for all his criminal activity? Very slanted questions, as expected. Right. But here's his response. There's something very interesting. Here's what, play clip number one.
Mr. Saar, you've been calling for impeachment for 2 years. Does there need to be bipartisan support?
Anderson, this is my first time on this stage, so I just want to start by reminding everybody that every candidate here is more decent, more coherent, and more patriotic than the criminal in the White House. But I also want to point out that Anderson's right. 2 years ago, I started the Need to Impeach movement because I knew there was something desperately wrong at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that we did have the most corrupt president in the country, and that only the voice and the will of the American people would drag Washington to see it as a matter of right and wrong, not of political expediency. So, in fact, impeaching and removing this president is something that the American people are demanding. They're the voice that counts, and that's who I went to, the American people.
All right, there's so many gems in that. But 2 years ago, you know, before the president even was able to, you know, get warmed up at the desk in the Oval Office, I was showing the need to impeach this president. I mean, this reveals their agenda. This has been about impeachment, about removing this president almost from day one.
Yes, it's been a political goal in search of a rationale. And yes, President Trump didn't even call Ukraine until 3 months ago, but he was for it 2 years ago. So he's always been for it. You know, people were for it before Robert Mueller was named to be an independent counsel. We put together a video. We had George Stephanopoulos on Good Morning America asking about Trump potentially being impeached on November 10th, 2016, 2 days after the election. This has been something that has, you know, the liberals who were weeping and sobbing on election night 2016 have wanted this for the whole time. They've been looking for an excuse and a rationale. And I think what's happened over the last couple of years is they were going to let Robert Mueller find all the evidence and let him make the case for impeachment. Well, he found some evidence, would not say that it needed to be met with impeachment. He gave some testimony where he basically gave one-word answers because he did not want to say what the Democrats wanted him to say. So this time they're not asking for an independent counsel. They're not asking for an independent investigation. They're doing it themselves behind closed doors with no rules of fairness, none of the rules that you had in the Nixon inquiry or the Clinton inquiry where the White House gets to deal with things like executive privilege or things like that. They are just, you know, working through this as fast as they can under their own timetables, and the media are cheering them on because they've been cheering them on, you know, for a long time. And yes, and Tom Steyer has thrown tens of millions of his own dollars at this campaign. But of course, all that happened before 2018. So, you know, so far he's wasted his money. He's trying to redeem his investment, I guess.
Now, Senator Warren is the one that racked up the most speaking time out of all the candidates, which is a byproduct of the being, I guess, perceived the front runner and being attacked by all the others. Is she now going to be the front runner going forward? Did she help herself last night?
Well, I think she held her own. I mean, she was attacked more. She's being attacked a little bit by, you know, some of these very liberal candidates like Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar for being too radical to win. And I think a lot of Democrats are worried about that when he can make his point. Even Joe Biden makes an excellent point, which is that people who've negotiated through their unions or wherever good health care are going to lose all of that under this one-size-fits-all Medicare for all system. And they, you know, they don't even want it to be a choice. You know, I think, you know, what interests me is watching news coverage. You know, you see story after story on the news about how people can't afford their health care, prices are out of control. It's as if we didn't just have a Democratic president who passed the
right
reform of all reforms.
Exactly.
You know, they need to do it all over again. So I think that's going to be a rough spot for her as she moves out of sort of the liberal side of the Democratic Party toward the general election. I expect you'll get a challenger for her, but right now she's sort of moving Bernie aside. She's sort of owning the left side of this debate, and Joe Biden is having a hard time holding up the middle.
All right. We'll leave it there. Rich Noyes, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
All right, folks, we're going to have more, diving a little bit deeper in the policies behind the sound bites a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come after the break.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, and I'm glad you're with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, a federal court handed down a huge victory for the conscience rights of medical professionals across the nation. In Franciscan Alliance versus Azar, a federal regulation threatened to drive religious doctors out of practice if they would not perform gender transition procedures that violate their medical judgment and their beliefs. But the ruling strikes down the regulation, ensuring that doctors can continue practicing their profession consistent with their moral beliefs and rights of conscience. Joining me now is Luke Goodrich. He is the vice president and senior counsel at Beckett Fund and the author of Free to Believe, The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America. Luke, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. So great to be back.
Well, look, this is a major, major decision. Now, I know it's at the district court level, most likely going to be appealed, but this is a major decision in which it affirms the rights of conscience of medical professionals.
That's right. It's a huge victory, and it was against a significant threat. This case arose because of Obamacare. And during the Obama administration, HHS, that's the Department of Health and Human Services, passed a new regulation, and it said that doctors and hospitals across the country would have to perform gender transition procedures, like helping patients transition from one gender to another. And if they wouldn't do that, these doctors and hospitals faced massive financial penalties, and they would be labeled discriminators. So that's what we were up against.
Now, I said that this would be appealed, but I don't know if a third party was allowed to intervene in this. So if it's just HHS, I guess this could be the final decision.
Yeah, so alongside of the HHS, the ACLU has tried to intervene in this case, and they've said, you know, we represent transgender patients who want to get gender transition procedures from these doctors, and they don't want to be discriminated against. So the court let the ACLU into this case to defend the regulation, and the ACLU will have the option to appeal.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if there was a third party that intervened or not. So, okay. So that does mean it could go to an appellate level. But this is a major decision, as we've long been looking at the rights of medical professionals under Obamacare. This could be precedent setting, and I think you'll see the department probably fully embracing this court decision.
That's right. After our initial court victory, the Trump administration decided that it would reconsider and reassess this rule, and it has proposed a change to the rule. But the issue is still live in court. There are cases in other parts of the country trying to force religious doctors and religious hospitals to perform these gender transition procedures. And our clients, they treat transgender patients joyfully and with compassion for everything from cancer to the common cold.
Right.
It's just there are certain procedures where you're giving, male hormones to a woman or removing a healthy uterus from a woman who thinks that she wants to live as a man. And there are very serious health consequences from these
right.
types of procedures. So the doctors that we're representing are saying, look, we love these patients. We want to treat them with compassion, but these procedures can be harmful. And so we can't do it both because of our religious beliefs, but also because of our medical judgment.
Yeah, that's extremely important, Luke, to point out that this is not about in any form or fashion denying health care. It's just being forced to perform a procedure that is medically unnecessary and even dangerous for the patient, as well as contradicting the beliefs of the medical professional.
Exactly. And we've cited to the court a number of studies, including a study done during the Obama administration by the HHS, which looked at the evidence and said there's not enough evidence to figure out whether these procedures even help people or not, and that there are studies showing significant harms. So, this is where compassion for people and religious freedom are fully aligned. And we're just so happy that this court ruling will allow these Christian doctors and hospitals to continue caring compassionately for these patients in accordance with their religious beliefs and their medical judgment.
And Luke, this is not something that's often discussed in this conversation, but this has, if this goes the wrong way, like if the decision would have been counter to this, not upholding the conscience rights, religious freedom rights of the practitioners, this has a negative effect upon those choosing health care as a profession. People of faith that want to go and serve others, when they have to choose between moving into that profession and violating their faith, they may make other choices.
Absolutely. We've seen this. I address this at length in my book, Free to Believe. We see this both in the abortion context and now in the transgender context, where when the government passes these kinds of bad laws, there are healthcare professionals who will be forced to leave their profession. And that ultimately deprives medical care for everybody. But especially, imagine you're a Christian parent and your child is struggling with his or her gender identity. And, you want a doctor who has a biblical understanding of what
Absolutely.
It means to be male and female. And if all of the people are driven out of the profession, it is absolutely devastating to healthcare.
That's absolutely right. Well, Luke, appreciate the great work that you and Beckett Fund do, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy, here is going to join me. We're going to take a deeper dive in the policies behind the statements made in the presidential debate last night. That's next here on Washington Watch. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman. For decades, the nation's leading abortion supplier has claimed to be the champion of women's rights, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Planned Parenthood has repeatedly violated the law and violated women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the devastating effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities, Planned Parenthood is an organization that not only promotes a culture of death, but makes it a reality. In a new brochure from FRC, you will find evidence that will challenge your assumptions about Planned Parenthood and equip you with the information you need to be a true champion for women and the lives of unborn children. To order this brochure and to download your free digital copy, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Last night, the fourth Democratic presidential debate, I caught parts of it. I was watching on the plane. I was actually flying back from Elizabeth Warren's home state. Actually, I spent a couple of days out at Plymouth, Massachusetts at the Rock, actually. I'll tell you more about that another time. But watched a little bit of the debate and on the plane, watched some of it. When I got back to the office, it just seemed like it was the debate that never ended. But, you know, 12 people on the stage, a lot of things talked about, sound bites, really hard to get down to real policies. But there's enough there that you can discern where they want to take America, all right? And so I know it's painful to watch some of this, that's a little sarcasm, but not much, because you tend to get angry with what they're saying. I mean, it's just so radical. But it's important. It's important to listen what they're saying and to see where they want to take America. Now, joining me now to talk about some of these policy positions, you know, statements. They're going to lead to policy positions. That's the only way you can carry them out. Is Travis Weber. He's the Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, I want to start with, this is kind of a montage of five of Democratic candidates talking about the abortion issue. Now, this is several of the candidates talking about the issue of life. So I'm going to Gray, let's play clip number five.
People need to keep their hands off of women's bodies and let women make the decisions about their own lives.
We're not talking about the clear and existential threat in America that we're in a state that has had two Planned Parenthoods close. We are seeing all over this country women's reproductive rights under attack.
I would codify Roe v. Wade and make it the law of the land.
I would make sure that we move and insist that we codify Roe v. Wade. The public is already there. Things have changed.
I'm not talking about packing the court just with people who agree with me, although I certainly will appoint people who share my values. For example, the idea that women's reproductive freedom is an American right.
I would also make sure that I appoint as president people who respect the precedent of Roe versus Wade, that we codify Roe versus Wade.
We now have support across this country. 3 out of 4 Americans believe in the rule of Roe versus Wade.
This is often one of the most difficult decisions that a woman will ever have to make, and it's unfortunate to see how in this country it has for so long been used as a divisive political weapon. I agree with Hillary Clinton on one thing, disagree with her on many others, but when she said abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, I think she's correct. We see how the consequences of laws that you're referring to can often lead to a dangerous place, as we've seen them as they're passed in other countries, where a woman who has a miscarriage past that 6 weeks could be imprisoned because abortion would be illegal at that point. I do, however, think that there should be some restrictions in place. I support codifying Roe v. Wade while making sure that during the third trimester, abortion is not an option unless the life or severe health consequences of a woman are at risk.
That last voice, Congresswoman Gabbard, is probably the most reasonable but still outlandish in calling for the codification of Roe v. Wade. Travis, first explain, as several candidates now are calling for the codifying of Roe v. Wade. What are they saying?
I think what they're saying is they want our nation's first Supreme Court abortion precedent, a case and decision from 1973, which is without constitutional basis. It's really a example of warping the Constitution to read policy into the Constitution. They want this horrendous decision to be put in statute, enacted by our nation's legislature, Congress, to impose this on the whole country.
And that's important to know, that they recognize that Roe v. Wade, which has been, or Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which is the subsequent case law that really is the governing case law on abortion, that they recognize that it's only by the court's imposition that that is the policy of this country. Congress never voted on it. And for them to say that this is where America is at, as Biden said, is simply not true. If America was for this, Congress would have passed it. They wouldn't have to. They would not have had to rely on the courts to impose it on the nation.
Right. Tony, we often hear them look to Supreme Court decisions as though they're binding on the whole nation. I mean, we'd see this even with lower court decisions when the marriage cases were decided. One federal judge decides something, and when people like it, they act like that binds the whole nation. On the other hand, they're going to use this case to argue that, you know, Congress needs to codify Roe v. Wade, as we're hearing in the debate, because it gives them something to talk about and show how they're going to go even more extreme on their abortion positions. We want a Supreme Court decision on abortion. We want Congress to codify it. But this is no surprise when we look at what has been happening in the Democrat Party the last year, New York State, Illinois, and then Virginia earlier this year in New York, with them celebrating abortion, celebrating a culture of death. Roe versus Wade is the case which allows abortion right up to the moment of birth. We document this for people on a new map we've put out, frc.org/pro-life map, where we show the states where abortion is still legal up to the moment of birth, where we've not had pro-life successes, and we applaud those pro-life successes out there because we see how it contrasts with what these candidates are putting forward.
Senator Cory Booker, the closure of abortion clinics, existential threat?
The language is pretty extreme. We're talking about language
we've got North Korea with nuclear weapons. We've got China wanting to sink our economy. You know, we've got what's happening in the Middle East and to him. This is an existential threat, the closure of abortion clinics?
Tony, we just heard from a North Korea defector implore us at VVS to pay attention and care about what's happening in North Korea, because people are living under oppression. Their stories are not even getting out because they're under such oppression. They're dying, being tortured in camps.
Forced abortions?
Coerced abortions, as we heard in the testimony. We know about the repression of the people in Iran. We've covered the detention and surveillance, the horrific treatment of religious minorities in China. We can go on and on about other places around the world, Pakistan and the treatment of Christians and others there. Those are threats. Those are things that all of us need to be focused on, advocating for freedom and religious liberty around the world.
I mean, this is people need to hear what they're saying, because this will tell you. I know that some of this clearly is political pandering, but it leads to policies. I think you're going to see in the party platform, certainly the Democratic Party platform, which was the most extreme, 3 years ago, coming up next summer, I think it's going to be even more so. Another area that they focused very heavily on was the issue of income inequality, which, you know, it's amazing how they choose words. But this was entrepreneur Wang. This is what he had to say about a wealth tax. Play clip number two, Greg.
Mr. Yang, would you oppose a wealth tax?
Senator Warren is 100% right that we're in the midst of the most extreme winner-take-all economy in history. And a wealth tax makes a lot of sense in principle. The problem is that it's been tried in Germany, France, Denmark, Sweden, and all those countries ended up repealing it because it had massive implementation problems and did not generate the revenue that they'd projected. If we can't learn from the failed experiences of other countries, what can we learn from? We should not be looking to other countries' mistakes. Instead, we should look at what Germany, France, Denmark, and Sweden still have, which is a value-added tax. If we give the American people a tiny slice of every Amazon sale, every Google search, every robot truck mile, every Facebook ad, we can generate hundreds of billions of dollars and then put it into our hands because we know best how to use it.
Now, I hope you heard what he said. He wants to take a little slice out of each of those transactions, which is what a tax of that nature is. Every sale, every purchase, the value added tax, and put it into our hands because we know how best to use it. Now, if anybody believes that the government knows how best to use money, then quite frankly, they've not been paying attention, because we've got $22 trillion in debt that suggests we don't know how to spend that money.
Tony, I do think, this shows sort of, again, we see comments like this. We see an inherent trust in government and trust in bureaucrats, a trust in people who are unelected to run and govern our country and decide social policy, as we often discuss here. That trust is misplaced. It should be placed in the people. And that's what it means to be American. It's what it means to be free and to live under our Constitution.
I mean, their economic policy scares me. They're really pushing a division of the classes. I mean, you talk about divisive. The policies that they're pushing, essentially. Look, I'm not a fan of, politically speaking, most of the billionaires, the ones that they were going after last night, are not aligned with the right. They're aligned with the left. They're funding, you look at Microsoft and all of these Apple and Facebook. I mean, these guys are pushing leftist ideas. But you know what? I think they have a right to make money, and they have a right like everybody else. And I actually think that while I disagree with some of them in terms of their policies and how they're using their money, that's their business. Yeah. This is America.
Yeah.
They're creating opportunities for other people.
Tony, this is key, because it's a matter of understanding the basic principles of economics. There was I heard one of Al Mohler's podcasts several weeks ago where he actually went into this on the California rent control issue and really talked about what's best for the common good. People get fixated on taking from someone who has more and imposing what they perceive to be relief for someone who has less, but it doesn't help the society at large.
Well, in a very simplistic way, there was a fairy tale that I read, a little children's book called The Golden Goose, or The Goose That Laid the Golden Egg, rather. And, it's very simplistic, but, that goose laid that golden egg, and that egg was valuable, but greed drove them to kill the goose to try to get inside and get all of the golden eggs. And guess what? They killed it, and there were no more golden eggs. Capitalism is like the goose that laid the golden egg. Now, I don't agree with what people do with their money, but, quite frankly, they have that right to make that decision. And the byproduct of people being successful is that they create more jobs. Government doesn't create jobs, not jobs that create wealth and income. Government is a consumer, and that's what they want. They want more government. And as they pull from people who are successful, eventually people are going to say, why bother? Why bother? And that zaps the American spirit, the entrepreneurial spirit that creates jobs and opportunities for other people.
Tony, you talk to anyone who's lived under Soviet communism, and not just the Soviet Union, but people who lived under that umbrella of countries and then found freedom in the West, whether it had to flee here or when that opened up and they came to the West. They understand the value of a free market, a free economy to grow, create jobs and wealth for the blessings of a society. Now, we often say that's not the end-all be-all. You have to have morality intersecting
right.
with economics.
Right.
You have meltdowns like immorality pervading through Wall Street, et cetera, et cetera.
And we've seen that.
We've seen that. But that doesn't mean you throw out the baby with the bathwater as people perceive it and get rid of what is given your society.
But as Christians, and we'll speak to this for just in our few moments left, from a Christian standpoint, to be envious or to want to take what someone else has, quite frankly, is counter to Scripture. In fact, you know, I think in America or in any economy, whatever the case, you know, God blesses those who work and those who do and those who provide for others and meet the needs of others. If you can meet a need, you're going to find that you're going to get something back. Same is true in economic transaction. If you create a product or you create a service that somebody else needs or wants, guess what? You're going to get something back. And so I think rather than demonize and tear down those people who have been successful, even though we may not agree with them from a standpoint of ideological holdings or politics, man, thank God that they live in a country that can be successful.
Tony, I think, you know, America, you know, we could perhaps sum up the modern economics of our country with the idea that we have given birth to the human creative spirit, and that is flourish, and that's something that glorifies God and shows God on earth, that human beings creating wealth and opportunities for their fellow citizens and blessing them and therefore blessing their country.
Right.
This is something we can't lose sight of, even though obviously there's more nuance and we need
right.
morality to intersect with it. We cannot lose sight of that.
Even if the particular individuals aren't using their wealth for purposes that honor God, still there is a byproduct that blesses other people.
And it doesn't defeat the principle.
That's right. It's the principle. So as Christians, I think, first off, this class envy that's being created is totally contrary to Scripture. And, you know, look, we live in a country where we are blessed. And I just, again, want to warn people, look at what they're saying because they're policy prescriptions that are beneath the sound bites.
I would agree. And I think we need to look at these things wholeheartedly. Not only, you know, the party platforms, I'm looking at them right now, the Democrat and Republican Party platforms on life and abortion, clearly distinct, but all the things we've mentioned too. People need to discern and look into these things and not just take the headline they see.
And we're going to have plenty of time to talk about these in the weeks and months ahead, and we will. Folks, out of time. I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6 when he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.